welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Hi, Chris, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Scott. Great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you on. We spoke very briefly before we hit the record button. We've never really covered this topic on, I think, 110 episodes for a couple of reasons. First of all, because it wasn't necessarily one of the main priorities. I think that's changed a little bit. Maybe that's where I'm at my coach in the age group that I coach. But also, I've never really found the right person to talk about the subject. But having watched a lot of the stuff you put out recently on social media, well, over the last couple of years probably, you are definitely the right person. So having reached out to you, you kindly saying yes pretty quickly. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast.
Oh, it's a joy. Yeah, I'm happy. I'm always happy to talk about football, Scott. So any excuse.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, fantastic. Well, look, obviously, I've been stalking you probably going intensely for the last 6 months plus, so I feel like I know you already. But for those that haven't had the privilege of seeing stuff you put out on social media or know you, just a brief bit about your background, what you did do and what you currently do, if that's okay?
Yeah, sure. So I've had over 30 years in the professional game. I played non-league and I coached here and abroad. I managed here. I managed Cheltenham Town, for example, and other clubs. And then I really went into scouting probably about 15 years ago, probably near 18 years ago now, I guess. Time goes on. Yeah. And I always enjoyed the identification of talent when I was managing in non-league, for example. I had to do a lot of my own scouting. You know, I didn't have a big scouting department then. So I've always enjoyed finding talent. And so it seemed a natural thing for me to do when I felt that I was getting a bit too old to keep coaching, which I think is a younger man or younger woman's game, really. I felt it was the right thing to do to move into scouting. And so I did all my qualifications and what have you. And then I worked for various clubs and then had 12 years at Chelsea in senior recruitment roles in the academy, which was fantastic. I'm a Chelsea fan, so it was a real bonus for me to be working for the club I supported. And a great academy, one of the best academies in the world, of course, great experience across the whole range of scouting. And then I left there last November to start the business. And then I've also gone on, I'm head of academy recruitment at Southampton now as well. So it's a busy time, but it means that I've done the whole range of scouting from grassroots to first team scouting, opposition scouting, a lot of video scouting, which I'm sure we will talk about, and academy scouting where you're looking at other clubs. And there's not that many people who have actually done the whole range, you know. Yeah. So that's hopefully will give me a personal and practical context for the things that I say.
So were you in Chelsea before Abramovich took over? Did you see it before? Or did you come in the nice time when there was lots of money floating around?
I've been supporting them since I was 4 years old. So
you've seen the dark side?
Absolutely. Yeah. Whereas my two youngest sons, who are 25 and 26, who are big Chelsea fans too, and we had season tickets for years, they've only seen the good times, which I keep telling them. Yeah. So, from a work point of view, Mr. Abramovich had taken over, which I think, sort of 2004, and I started work 2012 for Chelsea.
Yeah.
So it was well established with the fantastic facilities that there are at Cobham. So I was have been part of that very successful journey that the academy has been on.
Yeah, for sure. There's some fantastic players coming through there. I've had the privilege of being to Cobham a few times and it is an unbelievable place. It's just beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, well, that leads us nicely on to the next thing then. So obviously, I know you're full-time right at Southampton, which I'm sure we'll cover in more detail at points during the conversation anyway. But can you tell us a bit about the scouting game, like what it is, how it came about and how it's going?
Yeah, it's been a strange journey, really, Scott, because what started it was in summer 23... I got a contract from a publisher to write a book on scouting. So they were saying, look, there's no comprehensive books on scouting out there, not written by people who've actually done it anyway. And so that was great. And so I wrote the book and over a period, it took me about a year, I suppose, to write in my spare time. And then the publishers said, "Well, look, you need to raise your profile. Although the book's not out until January, come in January, a couple of months' time, January 6th, actually." They said, "You know, at least a year before that, you've got to start building up your profile. You're known in the game after 30 years, but you've got to get outside. And the way to do it is social media." Well, I'd never done any social media. You know, I didn't even have an Instagram account. But fortunately, my wife is much smarter than I am, Julie. So she came up with the idea of how we might start doing some videos. And, you know, and I think you might have found the same with the podcast, really. You do them, you put them out there, and you think, well, what happens now? Is it, is there any going to be anybody on the end of this? You know, is that it? Just go off somewhere. And anyway, the response was amazing. Right from the start, we were getting 50, 60,000 people watching the little clips that we did, started on TikTok and then on Instagram and on from there. And we were just, the whole idea was that Julie would ask me questions about scouting, how it works. And there was such an appetite for that. But then we were getting loads of questions, which is fantastic, all around the world. People kept saying, "Can you tell me if my son or my daughter are any good?" So Julie, again, being brighter than me, said, "Look, there's a business here because people are crying out to have an honest, professional assessment of the kid. How close are they to academy standard or professional standard?" So last December, we launched the business just after I left Chelsea, as I left Chelsea. I knew I had to have a 3 month break before I could start anywhere else. And so it was a good time to start the business. And so we launched the idea of the scouting game business where people send us videos, full match videos, not clips, and we assess the players. And they could be players from age seven upwards, up to senior level. And we've done assessments now on players all over the world, a lot in America, Australia, a lot in UK, obviously, but also I did one last week for a player playing in a Champions League game. And he was Estonian. And we did a very good player from Turkmenistan before that. So it's been fascinating. We now have a small team of analysts and so on that work with us to help do it. And then what comes back to the customer, depending on what package you take, is either a 15-page written report on the player, absolutely taking the game apart, suggesting what they need to work on, how they can work on it, which is really important, next steps and what have you. And if they take the package, which is called a Premier Package, we also get the analysts to provide video clips explaining what they're doing that I can then comment on where they're doing wrong. We have an hour Zoom meeting at the end of it, so where I go through everything in detail. Now, no one else is doing this. This service isn't available anywhere else, and it has just sort of taken off, and it's been great. So that's how the scouting game, it's all really been based around the book, which, as I say, comes out in January. So that's what started the social media. That's what led to the business. And here we are.
The publisher's fault,
It
planting
is.
the seed.
It is. Bless them. Yeah, great thing. Yeah.
What I find really strange is the fact that no one else is doing it. Because you say it like that, and it's, of course, I'm sure that happens everywhere, and like you can tap into one of these places. But you're perfectly positioned to do it, obviously, given your background. But the fact you're kind of getting you're leading the way in this, it must be quite exciting.
It is, and it's funny because obviously I know loads of people in the game, and lots of people have said to me, "I thought of doing that," or, "Oh, I started to do that, but came up against this," and so on. And so it's an obvious thing to a service to offer, but you have to know the levels. That's the thing. I mean, it because we do it at any age, and it started off with just me doing it. If you send me a 7-year-old kid, a 10-year-old kid, a 20-year-old kid, I've worked across all of those ages at the top level. So I know I can compare them to players in my head. Oh, yeah, that's what a top 7-year-old is like. Well, not many other people have worked in at the top level across all the ages and all the standards, you know, from grassroots upwards. So people might have tried it at various times, but yeah. To get the credibility, I think it's been one of the things that's worked really well for us is that I can say, well, you know, when I saw this player at that age, they were like this, and this is what the kid needs to do. And then we wanted it to be very practical. You know this, Scott, as a parent with kids in the game. Parents want to know, well, okay, they're not doing this or they are doing that. What can they do to improve? What's the next step? So that's always been a big part of what we do. We say, this is what you need to work on. This is how you can work on it. And this is what you might look to, where you might go to get that work done, you know?
Which is
And
the most
so
important
I'm
bit, right?
practicing.
It's the process, how you move on from where
Yeah,
you are, not just where you're
absolutely.
at. Yeah.
Every player can improve. So what's the next step? What is it they need to work on? Now, we've had people use our reports and have sent those reports to clubs and got trials, which is fantastic. We had a Canadian boy, give you an example, 17, centre back, playing in men's football in Canada. We did an assessment on him, and he's a decent player. There's things you need to work on. He sent the whole, or his family sent the whole assessment, and he's got a contract now with a UK club, a League Two club, and their initial contact with him was our report. And that is wonderful. I love that,
That's
you know?
amazing, yeah. Oh, you're
Yeah, so
changing
if we can
lives,
help,
aren't you? You're changing
oh,
lives
well,
in a positive
yeah.
way, yeah.
And if we can help kids make their way or just enjoy the game more, you know, and
Yeah.
progress, that is terrific. So it's come out of nowhere, and it's just we've just followed our nose really through the process, and it's gone all right. Yeah.
It's great to hear. Just thinking then, obviously I can visualize what you're trying to do and how you go about it. I would imagine that looking at some decent footage of a player and enough of it, you could probably look at some good technical aspects and maybe even physical aspects of their game, which you can obviously with a 15-page
Definitely.
document you can cover. What about more of the psychological side and the
Definitely.
behavioral side? Is that
Yeah.
something that you stay away from, or can you still see that by
Absolutely.
looking at video footage of a game or training?
Absolutely. We take a four-corner approach. So exactly as you say, the technical side, relatively straightforward, physical side. Then we take the psychological side. And so how do we do that? Well, we do it in the same way that scouts do it every weekend, you know. When you go out and watch a player as a scout, you've probably never seen them before, don't know the kid. So what you're doing, you're searching for clues about that kid. You know, what sort of character are they? Do they want to win? Do they have a desire? Does it matter to them? Because if they don't have that desire to win, we know if when they come into an academy setting, for example, they're going to come up against hurdles. And unless they've got that drive and desire, they will struggle with those hurdles. So you're looking for clues. And those clues can be little things. When they lose the ball, what do they do? That's an easy one.
Yeah.
When their team scores, what do they do? Now, every kid is different, every character is different, and we don't know them. So these are just clues, they're not definitive answers. But through experience, you learn lots of little things by that. That's why every game I go to, whatever level, I try and watch the warm up. I'm there for the warm up. And I'm watching the players in the warm up as well. And little things like when a scout gives a player, a coach gives a player instruction during the game. How do they respond to that? How do they respond to their teammates as well? You know, so are they encouraging their teammates? Are they moaners? Are they always negative? Or are they encouraging others? So these little clues help you build up a little picture of their character. Now, I know from in the game, when you take a top Category One academy at 16, they're all good players. They're
Of course
all
they are.
good players in the
Yep.
academy. And what picks out those at 16 will go on to the top level, and those who fall by the wayside is character. So you take Conor Gallagher at Chelsea, my wife's favourite. I'm doing great in Atletico. Well done, Conor. Player of the month in his first month there, so great. So Conor at 15, 16 wasn't the best player in his age group. And he wasn't nailed on to get a scholar. But he, because he had some injury issues, particularly, but he always had fantastic drive and desire. Every training session, every game, you knew you'd get 100% from Conor. And he's driven himself on beyond players who probably at that time you might have said were better technical players than him or whatever. And now, of course, he's playing for England, played
Yeah.
at Atletico Madrid, a top class player, technically, physically. But that character still shines through in every game. So, knowing that character is so important, we have to look for clues. And that's all we
Yeah.
can do when we don't know the players. As we get to know them when we're scouting them and we get to meet the family, gradually the picture gets coloured in, you might say, about a player. So, the psychological side is really important. And then the tactical side, the tactical understanding, and that's awareness of other players. So if we're looking at a player who's 7 or 8, that's not so important. Can they play? Can they run with the ball? Have they got good technique? Have they got good physical movement? The physical and the technical side are going to be much more important. As they get older, we want to see the psychological side, their character, and we want to see their awareness of other players, the tactical side. So what does that mean? Well, when they've got the ball at their feet, do they see the pass, as we say? We're not even worried at this stage whether they execute the pass. Do they see a good pass? Are they aware of where their teammates are? When they haven't got the ball, are they aware of where the opposition are? Do they pick someone up? Do they see the other side of the game as well? So again, on the tactical side, you're looking for clues. As they get older, 12, 13, 14, the psychological and the tactical sides become more and more important. Because you know, if you bring them into an academy from grassroots at those ages, they're going to have a lot of catching up to do because they're coming up, they're playing with and against kids who've been in the system probably since they were 7 or 8. So, and if they've not been in the system, that's a big jump. So you're trying to find out, do they understand the game? Can they read the game? Are they good learners? Which is really important when you bring them in on trial at later ages. And again, at this stage, you've never spoken to the kid, you've never spoken to the family, probably. You're just first time seeing them. You're searching for these little clues. And it becomes so important about their character that that's one of the reasons why I always say the scouts, and I've trained a lot of scouts and I manage scouts now, as I did at Chelsea. I always say, if you can, you've got to see a player more than once. You know, if
Well,
you
come
know.
on, say, Chris, because there's lots of things you've mentioned there that I don't want to unpick the conversation too early here, but there's things I think we'll come back to because
Oh.
that sounds like a very thorough process and a right way of going about things, which gives obviously the player the best information they can then to work on and develop, which is what it's all about, right? That's what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
Just a side note, and I don't want to waste too long because I want to get into the real conversation. But what about position specific then? Because do you ever watch these videos back and maybe you've seen a centre forward or a centre back and think actually they're actually quite good, but they might be in the wrong position? Or is that not one thing that happens?
Absolutely, it does happen. Again, when they're younger, 7, 8, 9, 10, it doesn't really matter. We're looking at footballers, we're trying to develop footballers. So I'm not really worried about positions. I think what is interesting is parents need to bear in mind that academies will want to have a range of players and they might be different types of player, not necessarily positions, but you might want players that are more physical, some players that are technical, some that are good at winning the ball. You want to balance up your squad. So you might be looking for different things to balance them up. So that may be in your mind as a scout when you're looking at the younger ends, but not so much positions. But as we get older, you begin to look at positions. Now, there's a tension here in an academy. Academies are judged at the end of the day, Scott, by individual players that they create
Not
or
teams,
help.
right?
Yeah, not teams. And yet we spend a lot of our time 14, 15, 16, thinking we need a left back, we need a left winger, because you want to balance your team up and you want to give a good platform for everybody. So you do begin to look very specifically. I could go through now and do daily with my scouts at the club and talk about, well, in that age group, we need this, or we've got one of those. We need. So you can talk yourself out of players sometimes, you know.
Course.
But yes, you do get much more position specific as you get older. But every player, in my view, my opinion, should be able to play at least three positions. Let's presume we're playing 4-3-3. And so if you are left-footed, which is always going to be at a premium, it'd be good if you can play left, maybe left back, left centre back, and left midfield, or cent, defensive midfielder. If you're a forward, can you play right wing, central striker, maybe right back? I think you need to be able to offer three positions, and parents need to think about that with their kids. Why? Because if you only play one position, you've got one shirt out of the 11 you can wear. If you can play three well, you've got three chances out of 11. Simple
Absolutely.
maths. And you've got much more chance of getting games and being picked and being useful if you have a little bit of variety. And I think three positions is ideal if you can offer that range. So when kids are 15, 16, come to me and I'll go and see them, what position do you play? I play as a 10. Well, all right, what about if we don't play with a 10? What are you going to play then? Or I play the pivot, the single pivot. That's my role, sit in front of the back. Okay, what about if we don't play that?
You're out of the game.
You're talking yourself out of a shirt, you know.
But
So,
also, Chris, don't you think
right.
in the modern football, like, often, well, it looks like football's heading this way, well, it's already there in many ways, but you don't play one position, do you? In a game, you're going to move in and rotate around a little bit, especially in those link-up roles, right? So you might start as a left wing back, but you're going to pop into maybe left midfield or as a left winger.
Absolutely.
So you've got to be fluid in the game.
You look at the last few years, and of course, Pep Guardiola sort of was one of the leading advocates of this, and now lots of teams do it. Most teams, when in possession, one of the fullbacks is going to not go up the outside like they used to,
Up in the middle.
step into midfield.
Yep.
I watched, as I say, as a Chelsea fan, watched the game against Liverpool on Sunday, and when the Vega came on, he sort of started normally at left back. He was playing in centre midfield most of the game.
Absolutely.
So who would have thought a few years ago that you would have had your left back come on and play most of the game when you're in possession? And Chelsea were in possession of most of the game and dominated the game, but let's not go there. That's still lost. But he ended up playing in central midfield. So yeah, absolutely, you're quite right. You've got to have that flexibility within a game. As a centre back, one of the things we judge is what does a centre back do in possession? Sometimes to the detriment, because centre backs are defenders. So I always say to the scouts, because scouts will come to you with a centre back and say, "Oh, he plays out lovely. It's all Rio Ferdinand's fault. They play out lovely, great footballer, passes really well off either foot." Yeah, but can he defend? Can he win the ball? Because that's their first job. But absolutely, with the ball, can they break the lines, go into midfield, and create overloads, which is what it's all about? And then you'll have done in training, 3v2s, 4v3s, and the team should be used to being able to play around people and progressing with the ball, keeping possession. So absolutely, a bit of flexibility is important, whatever position. But I would encourage players to be work at playing three different positions as they get older.
Perfect.
Shouldn't be too much of a stretch at all.
No, not at all. Brilliant. Thank you, Chris. Okay. Well, look, the main part of the conversation, if that's okay, is going to take a little look at, surprisingly, scouting, but particularly looking at grassroots scouting and kind of I guess it's the pre-academy foundation phase, the younger age groups, which I hope that's okay with you. I know you've been around
Yeah,
Liverpool, so I hope that's
sure.
okay. And, you're at Southampton, so feel free to refer to that if you want to, but you don't have to. But I guess from your experience more broadly about, what you've seen, kind of that kind of stuff, we're going to unpick some of that if that's all right. But just before we start, because even I've coached for 10 years, grassroots football, voluntary coach, nothing special. I'm a very average coach, but we've been around this world. But the scouting is a bit of a kind of a dark arts on the periphery that we don't really get to see behind the curtain. Do you know what I mean? And someone turns up and they've got a jacket on, and everyone gets a bit excited, and so if you don't mind demystifying some of this, that'd be
Yeah,
fantastic. And I thought
absolutely.
as a starting point, just, from an academy perspective, I'm not saying Southampton specifically, because that might be unfair, but just generally speaking, how does it work? What number of scouts, what they're doing, how are they regulated? Like, just a broad overview of kind of how it looks from your side of things, the bit that we don't get to see in that kind of space.
Okay, so it varies according to the size of the academy. That's the first thing to say. So let's take what the big Category One academies that I've worked in, as I do now, at Chelsea. And so you're looking at in the South, Arsenal, Tottenham, all the big academies. They're going to have a group of scouts out watching grassroots game every weekend. They might have 30 to 40 in the catchment area. Now, we know that from under nine, which is the first age you can sign for an academy, through to under 11, you have to be within an hour of the training ground. From under 12 to under 14, sorry, under 12 to under 16, you can be an hour and a half from the training ground. After under 16, it doesn't matter. Broadly, that's the case. There are some exceptions. So the scouts will focus on those areas. So take the training ground. If you're looking at, you say, the pre-academy foundation phase, so from under 6 to under 10, 11, you're going to be within an hour of the training ground. So that third, let's say half of those scouts are doing the younger ages. 20 scouts at Category One Academy will be out at weekends looking within an hour of the training ground. So how do they do that? They'll be local, they'll know the leagues, they'll know who the good clubs are. The key to being a good scout is a good network. So they're out. They've got to be out there watching games. That is the starting point. It's a numbers game in that sense. So if you're a parent, you've got a kid and they're playing with their mates, and they might be in one of the lower divisions. You have to accept that if you were a scout, and I, as your boss, said to you, right, go out and find some talent, Scott, in that area, you'd start at the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you got, just because of that, you've got more chance to get scouted if you're in the top divisions, because you'd start there as a scout. And I've been there as a grassroots scout in a new area. Let's find the best league, start with them, work downwards. So just from that point alone, if the kid has ambition and you have ambition for the kid to play at a higher standard, you have to go up the leagues, you know? And
Yeah.
I said this before, if you're the best player in your team, you're in the wrong team.
Very on team. Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got to push yourself and to progress, and you've got to go high, because that's where the scouts will go. So the scouts will be out there looking. Let's say they find some talent. They have to speak to the manager of the team, someone such as yourself running the team, the coach, not directly to the parent. First of all, they talk to the coach, say, oh, I really like this kid, tell me a bit about them. And then they might invite them in to, it can be an assessment centre or a development centre, some sort of a sort of assessment process, filtering process, or they might invite them into a proper full academy trial, an 8-week trial. We can talk about what that means. But that's the process. As I mentioned before, I always say to scouts, if you can go and watch them again, do.
Yeah.
Rather than, I've made so many mistakes with good and bad based just on one viewing of a player. Because a kid can have a good game, can have a bad game. You want to see them against different opposition, different context, if you can do
Yeah.
that. So I would usually say to scouts, okay, you've seen a player you like. Find out what their fixture is next week and go and watch them again and see what they're like.
Great. Chris, I think it's a great point, and I guess sitting on the other side of this equation and it can sometimes be perceived from the coach's manager's side that we stand in the way of that process. Like we want to protect our players, don't want to move them on to the thing. And I can genuinely say, in terms of doing this, I don't know of one coach that I think has genuinely stood in the way of a player progressing. But unfortunately, what does happen sometimes is a scout may come along and they may look for a game for 20 minutes. They won't see the warm up, like you said, is important. They've just had a look. The kid might have just scored a great goal or something else. Or I've even had scouts in the game come to me and say, which player should I put forward? Then they've watched 20 minutes of a match. And again, like you want to do the right thing by the players. It can, the counter side is it can be quite disruptive. So we can have a player that might get put on, say, into an 8-week trial or something else. And you know, in your heart of hearts, however much you want the best for them, that they're probably not going to, they're not at that level. And just one scout seeing 20 minutes of a game, it doesn't help the kid, doesn't help the environment, gets everyone a bit overexcited about, okay, well, if little Jimmy's gone there or little Jane's gone there, then I need to be going to this place to get there as well. And it creates that kind of thing. I've jumped ahead a little bit here, but how is that something you're aware of from like a broader perspective?
Yeah.
I'm sure not you personally. And are the clubs aware of that? And did they try and do anything about it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point. I would say from the years that I've been doing this, 90% of coaches are very encouraging for players to go on and take their opportunities in academy. You know,
Absolutely.
they're delighted with the kid. They might not necessarily think that was the best kid in their team, but whatever. And they're happy to see the kids progress. No, I would say 90%. But you do get those who, sometimes for good reasons, often the reason is, and it could be, a bit unfair here. I have found it often that if a parent is running the team and their kid has had a bad experience with academies in general at some
Yeah.
time in the past,
The
then they are
walls up
not
more, the
keen on
barriers are up a
academy.
bit more. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, a bad experience usually means they've been turned down. No more than that. And that's very unfortunate if that's the case. I've seen examples of this. I could point you to a lad who's now playing in senior men's football, non-league, doing very well, who I wanted to take into Chelsea when he was 12 for a trial. But the coach said no. He really had a team, they were winning everything, really important to this coach. They kept winning everything. And he really discouraged the parents and for any of his players. He said, oh, you can, take them at 16 if you want them. And you try and explain, well, actually, that's 4 years of a top level games program, let alone top level coaching, that the kid's going to miss out on. I've been watching the kid, watch him at 16. brought him into something. I remember at 16, but he wasn't. He had lost ground
Yeah,
compared
of
to
course.
those who might have been better at 12. And now I see him; he's doing really well in non-league. But he could have been in the Capman Academy and maybe have a career in the game. And I do feel that is very sad when that happens. Now, if I come and scout one of your players, Scott, and you say, "Well, look, Chris, that's great, but we've got a cup final next week. We well, it's all season for it, you know, and all the boys want to do well in this cup final." Then a good club are going to be able to say, "No problem, Scott. We'll sort that. We'll release him to play in your cup final. You can do that. You know, we don't want to disrupt the whole thing." Or how about, which we've often done, say, "Well, we'll delay the start of his trial for a week or so to let you do that or play in that big tournament or whatever it is." So the good scouts and the good clubs will work with the local teams and the local coaches because you want to have good relationships with them going forward. It's common sense, you know? So usually there needs to be a bit of give and take to avoid the 20-minute syndrome that you mentioned there before, you know, the player who jumps out. Because if you only look at a quick 20, you know, who shines in 20 minutes, certain types of players are going to be at an advantage, aren't they? The ones who score the worldie, for example. And you might
There's
not
certain
see.
points of the game, right? Because if the last 15 minutes is a bit easier than the first 15 minutes and whatever else and fresh legs. So you just don't get it. I just don't know how you'd make a judgment based on 20 minutes watching a match.
Absolutely.
I can watch 10 matches and all the kids look different each time.
Yeah.
So
Now, having
that's.
said that, and so generally I agree, and that's why I do say to scouts, you've got to go back and watch them more than once if you can. It's not always possible. It can be under time pressure. But the other thing is, you and I could stand by the side of a pitch, Scott, and I guess within 5 minutes, we could both say who's the best and who's the worst player.
Absolutely.
It's all the little darlings in between that are the challenge, you know, who might be really good and who are not yet at it on that day and or for whatever reason. And it's guessing or judging, depending on what term you want to use, what players might be like in a different setting and in a year or 2 years, that is a real challenge of scouting. Because invariably we're looking from a higher level of the game and saying, can they translate up to us? Or now when I'm looking at older players, I'm going out watching the player, which I'll be doing next week, 16. Could he come into a Cat One Academy and be a scholar next year and be a young pro? Could he make that step up? I'm trying to estimate, which is very difficult to do when you're looking at one standard. What would they be like in another standard? That's a whole skill set and another set of judgments. So, yeah, we can pick out the outstanding players and those who are really struggling very quickly, but that is only part of the story, you
For
know,
sure.
and that isn't the full picture. And if we watch a game where one team wins 8-0, 10-0, whatever, I always think no one learns from a game when you win 10-0 from either team. And probably certainly no one on the team that's lost 8 or 10-0 is going to enjoy it. And it is supposed to be about kids enjoying it at grassroots. So that's not great for anybody. But you can't tell a lot about the players who are, you know, who've run through and scored 4 or 5 goals if they were a completely different level from the players they're playing, you know. So that's a challenge. So again, you need all points to seeing the players in different settings against different opposition, hopefully different circumstances.
That
You will
makes
have
sense.
seen, Scott, players who look terrific when you're 3 or 4 nil up, but go 2 nil down. And some players
Suddenly it's a different game.
can't hide. They don't want to see. They don't
That's
want to
that
show.
character side, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, in order to judge that, you need to see them in different circumstances.
Okay, perfect. And Chris, just from a kind of getting signed up as a scout to an academy, how is that process? How rigorous is it? And what, generally speaking, again, would clubs ask from someone who wants to be a scout? How far do they look at things besides maybe doing a talent ID online thing and maybe some safeguarding or a DBS check? Is there more to it than that?
Yeah, sure. And there's a whole variety of different paths into scouting. So, as I say, one of the real important things for a scout to have is a network, you know, and the developer network. That is people that they know in the game. There's a guy at Chelsea called Ray Rembridge, who's probably the most successful scout Chelsea have ever had in the modern era. So, Reece James, Conor Gallagher, Trevor Chalobah, Nathaniel Chalobah, loads of others. Ray found them all. Absolutely top scout. And he's been working in the same area in Surrey for years and years. And if you go to a game with Ray, and I've been to many with him over the years, we might go to a non-league game, and to walk around from one side of the ground to the other to go and see
Takes you an
him, it
hour.
takes you about half an hour because he knows everybody and they all want to talk to him. So two things in that. Firstly, he knows a lot of people. And second thing, he's respected as an absolute gentleman and someone good. And that's what you want as a scout. So as a scout manager, you're looking for people who you think might have that network or could develop that network, people who are respected. If they're running a team, that's a bit of a problem because on every Sunday, they're going to want to be with their team. So they're only going to see half the number of games. Half the number of sides, rather, because their team is there every week and they're only seeing the op. So you're
Course.
looking for people who have availability and are ready to put the time in. It is time consuming. Most grassroots scouts need to be out on Saturday and Sunday morning, maybe Sunday afternoon, maybe one night in the week coming to a development centre, seeing what the talent level is like, or even to the academy. So, and money's not great. There's lots of clubs who work just on volunteers. But if you're even a bigger academy, you might get, I don't know, £300 or £400 a month, something like that. It's not, you're not a big earner, plus. So you do it for the love of the game and to be involved. And so you're looking for someone who you believe will go out, develop that network, can judge a player. So they might have played the game. That was always a good start. They might have coached. That's another good start. You think, yeah. Or what I would do is if someone wants to be a scout, I go and watch a game with them and we talk about the game. So I might say to you, what do you think of that guy, Scott? Or we see
What are you
someone who
seeing?
does really well. Yeah. So you're trying to get, do they know the game? Do they see the player? So you do those sorts of assessments. Character again is very important. Then, as you say, there has to be the DBS check. Every scout who represents a club should have with them, must have with them, photo ID. So everyone's, I could show you mine now, we're not just on the audio, but I have it with me all the time, and scouts should do that. I have a photo ID. So just wearing the coat isn't enough. They've got to be able to say who they are. And then that if they're with a club, they've been DBS cleared, you know that they would have done a basic level of scout training. And so that is a reassurance for the club. And that's good practice for the scout to go up to the manager and say, "Hi, I'm Chris Robinson from wherever." Show them your card, show them your pass, your staff pass. That's good practice. Because otherwise, you can have lots of people who might say they're scouts and they might not actually be scouts.
We've
So
had
there's got to
that.
be that security there. Yeah. So it's really important that the parents know what they can expect if someone is a proper scout. But people come from all sorts of backgrounds. But those are the things you're looking for. Can they build a network? Do they have a network? Do they understand the game? Would you be happy with them representing your club? Do they present well? That's one of the reasons why for grassroots scouting, whichever club I've worked for, I like our guys to have club kit so that we know that they're dressed smart, they're representing the club, they're showing people out there on that in that at that rec ground or that school playing fields. Oh, this club is interested in us. They've got one of their people here. It's one of the reasons you put them in kit, but it also means that they look the part, you want they are to that person, to that parent at that moment, they are your football club, that scout. They're represented. So they've got to present well and they've got to be able to speak to people and communicate and what have you.
There's a feeling or a belief in the grassroots football game that when a scout comes to a match, to validate their attendance, they have to put a player's name forward. So basically, they've got to pick a player that they've seen just so they can show they've been to the game. Is that something that happens, Chris? Is that true? And is that practice, or is that a bit of a myth?
I think some clubs might be asking, some academies might be asking that of scouts. I
Right.
never have. I would say most of the bigger academies now will have an app that their scouts have that shows they show what game they went to on that app, and a few clicks of a button to say this is a game on this day. Nobody of interest. That's fine.
Of
It's not
course.
always going to be. But we want to know where the scouts have been. What age groups are they covering? Are they covering the age groups we think they should be covering and the right games? So you've got to track scout, and then they will claim their expenses based on that as well. So that's fine, probably for those who get expenses. But no, they don't. There's no minimum requirement in the sense that you've got to find someone from that game. I would ask a scout through that system who was the best players, but those best players might not be good for us. You know, that's fine. So over a period, if I'm saying to a scout, okay, Scott, you're covering that area for us, and we've got an assessment centre. We want the best players in that area to come into the assessment centre so that we can have a look at them and see whether they're ready for a trial. I would expect you to produce some players. You know, there's got to be some product
Of course.
to them. Otherwise, I might be saying to you, well, Scott, do you think that none of the teams have got any players that are near our level, which can happen? I say, okay, well, let's move to a different area then. Let's
Look
spread
somewhere
further,
else.
you know, different age groups or spread further afield. So, good management of the scouts means you have that communication and that you begin to trust the scout and they represent you well. And there shouldn't be a minimum level from each game because there can be lots of occasions where you go and watch a game and think, yeah, good game, maybe. Very competitive. Two teams really trying hard. No one for us. That's fine. That's fine.
Chris, how joined up in practice is the scout's eye of a game compared to maybe what the coach of the academy that Adrian might see? Because I guess that's the key here, right? Because if I'm looking at a player, I think, oh, they're fantastic and they'd be perfect for X club. But I don't know what the under 13s coach of that club was really looking for. You know, there might be a misalignment there. Is one of the key factors here to make sure the scout is the eyes for the club, but also understands what the club's looking for that age group?
Absolutely vital. Absolutely vital. So whenever anybody starts at a club that I've been involved in managing, the scouts, or someone says to me, "Oh, I've just got a job scouting here," I always say to them, "Right, spend your first weeks. I know you're keen to get out and find talent. Your first weeks have got to be watching your own teams. You've got
Absolutely.
to know the level that you are recruiting to, and you've got to meet the coaches and get an understanding of what they think they're looking for." Now, they're coaches. So we understand that coaches look at performance. Because I've been a coach for years and years, and you're a coach. You're looking at this game and looking at next weekend's game, and you want to do well in it. So you look at performance. As scouts, we are more interested in potential, but we also look at performance. So there is a slightly different perspective from a coach to a scout. But you have to get together and have that communication. Now, at the club I'm at now, we're just going through a whole process of reviewing the way we grade players. And we want the same system and the same criteria to be used when coaches grade our own players as to when we're looking at outside players. The
Makes
same
perfect
standard.
sense. Yeah, yep.
So that you say, well, that sounds like common sense. But at lots of clubs, that doesn't happen very well.
I
And
can
you do
imagine.
get that disconnect.
Yep.
Absolutely, that disconnect. And if scouts only are out watching grassroots football, they might go and watch a game, that game that I just mentioned. Yeah, really good game. And this kid was the best player on the pitch. Let's get him in. Well, you've got to know that whether being the best player in that game is comparable to the standard that you're trying to recruit to. Because they could be a great player, have a great performance on the day, but not have the potential to come in at a higher level. The only way to do that is to be able to go and see them, see our own teams. Now, geographically, we've got scouts all over the country, as most Cat ones do, looking at older players. And it might not always be practical to come up to the training ground. So how do we make that available? Well, we have a video platform and we get the scouts access to it and they can watch any of our age groups on video week in, week out. So I say to scouts, and I had this conversation recently. A scout said to me, "I've got this under 16 centre back. I think he's great." I said, "Okay, who does he compare to in our under 16s? Is he better than?" And the scout said, "Well, I haven't watched the under 16s recently." So I said, "You've got huddle access. How can you talk to me about a centre back?"
How do you know?
Yes, he said, "Absolutely. If you can't tell me whether he's
Where's your
better than you've
comparison?
got." Absolutely. So we as scout managers, in that sense, we have to make that available to the scouts. Come and watch. You're always welcome. Come and meet the coaches. Let's introduce you. Have joint events. training events, that sort of thing, or make it available on video. And then we expect the scouts to know the standard. If they don't do that, they're shooting in the dark. And
Yeah,
that's
well,
really.
it becomes more their own personal objective, right? Or subjective vision, which that might be fantastic. I'm not saying they're not good scouts, but they're looking at things that they value, which, with all respect, probably isn't as important as what the club values, right? Because we can all look at players and see different things. But the most important thing is say, what are you looking for? What do we need to get an under 16s group? Because otherwise, we're just going to waste everyone's time, potentially, if we don't know what we're talking about. Yeah, well, that makes sense. And I think it's great to hear that. I kind of get a vibe from, again, being on the outside of this, that done properly, this is a great tool, a great experience, and a great opportunity for everyone to develop and improve and get their full potential. But there are kind of a few pitfalls that you can easily kind of fall into, which actually means then suddenly we're not doing things maybe quite as well aligned. And potentially that then doesn't give the best experience for the club, the players, or the grassroots team either.
Let's imagine then that that scout brings in the kid who did really well in that game, but in practice they're nowhere near it. What happens? They come in, the kid's going to have a bad experience because they're going to be dropped in maybe into the start of their 8-week trial, and they could be well off in terms of their abilities, and
Yeah.
just be really, really uncomfortable for them. They're going to lose confidence. They're not going to feel that they can cope. They're just not ready for it. The coaches get fed up because you say to this guy, oh, because this time has to be allocated to everyone. Kid comes in on trial, then usually expect them to have the same sharing of minutes in
Yeah.
the games. And so the coaches get fed up with you. So one of the requirements that we as a team and each of the teams that I've managed of scouts, we put this is to one of our key performance indicators to look at the number of trialists we bring in. And look at the ratio of those that get signed. And if you are bringing in 10 trialists for one to get signed, you're bringing in the wrong trialists.
Absolutely.
You're wasting people's time. You're
Yeah.
not giving a good experience to the kids. So you've got to filter it better and have a much better hit rate than that. So these are the ways in which we measure those outputs to check that we are doing the right thing for the kids. And then you look at how the trial experience goes. Do they get buddied up with someone, another kid in the team? Do they get introduced to it carefully? And there's lots of things that can be done to make the experience as good as possible for the kid. Clear feedback to parents in
Yeah.
the middle of the trial and at the end of the trial so they know how they're doing. So after 4 weeks, you sit down with the parents and you say, look, Jimmy or Jane, they're doing really well. They're doing this well, they've settled in, they need to do more of this.
Yeah.
These are the things that we're worried about at this stage that they need to show us a bit more. And this is how we're going to work on that over the next 4 weeks. So when you get to the end of the 8 weeks and you have to sit down and I had to do this, I don't know how many times, hundreds, if not thousands of times, and it usually falls to me and the cousin Matt, sit down with the parent, and most of the time you're saying, I'm sorry, we're not going to sign them.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the joy of saying, yeah, we are going to sign them. Everybody's happy. But more often than not, of
Yeah,
course,
of course.
statistically, you're turning them down. If you've had that good process, they're almost there before you are. They know
Yeah,
what
they
to
know.
expect.
It's not a surprise. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now,
And they've
a
learned from the
lot.
experience, right? They're going to come out better for it.
Absolutely. And then we talk about, okay, what can we help you with going back? Can we go refer you to another club and this sort of thing? Your care, responsibility. Duty of care for the player continues beyond the trial, in my view, if you're
Yeah.
professional. But let's be clear also, Scott, a lot of the stories you hear from parents, I've got to say this, about bad experiences in academies absolutely hinges on the fact that somewhere in that conversation at the end was the word no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And however you
Yeah.
dress that up sometimes,
You can't get past that.
no.
Yeah.
And we're talking about elite sport. At this point, elite sport means selection. Selection means disappointment. And so, if as a parent you say, well, I'd love my kids to go to the academy, it'd be a great experience, and they might do well, and they might go on and have a great career. Absolutely right. And I agree that. And if it's done right, even if it's not successful, it should still be very positive. But you've got to expect that there's going to be a no somewhere,
Point. Yeah.
chances are. And you've got to be ready to deal with that and help the kid deal with that. Now,
Yeah.
however, I've done it all sorts of different ways. as the person who has to sit opposite the parent and the kid and give them that bad news. There's no easy ways to do it, but there are ways to try and make it as positive as possible. But you're still having that disappointment. I've had kids throwing themselves around the room in tears, and and parents too, and that's terrible. And I always say, if we got to that point, well, we've not done this well enough in the process, and you try and learn from it.
But
And
you're
so
a small
it
voice, Chris, aren't you? I guess the truth there is, like, however much, even if the perfect process, I think there will still be some circumstances where, because of the environment maybe the child's in, and I'm not knocking parents here, but it can become quite intense and it becomes the be all and end all for some. And you can't stop that, just whatever you say. I think even the best process, you're probably still going to find those sometimes those things are going to happen where it gets it too emotional for some, because it not that it means too much, but they well, maybe it does mean too much. Maybe they're so focused on this one answer that they're missing the bigger picture. Actually, it is just one answer, and they're probably still young, and it's the learning that matters, right? This is all part of the process. And I'm sure you can count lots of pros that have been probably turned down and gone on and
Oh, absolutely. You talk
Harry
about
Kane, I know,
Harry
and
Kane, a
others.
classic example, or Declan Rice at Chelsea, getting released or allowed to go to another club at 14 and goes on, plays for England and what have you, and has a fantastic career, and good luck to him. So you can tell them all those stories, which we do, but there's still that disappointment,
Course.
and it's elite sport. It's going to be there. And I know what you mean. Sometimes it matters too much. On the other hand, it's got to matter to them, because that goes back to when searching for clues, watching a kid, you're looking for character and you want that desire to win and you want that drive. Well, that's going to mean that they may be disappointed, and it's got to be important to them, because they're never going to survive if they do get taken on without that drive. It doesn't really matter to them. It's going to be hard for them to succeed, and it's tough. And we always, at clubs, want to do it better, and we want to look after the kids, and we want to have the best process you can. But that word no is going to be in there.
Yeah, of
And
course it
some
is.
parents, understandably, that's all they hear. And if the parents say, oh, whilst they're on a trial, oh, the kid's going to, this is a bit tough on the kid. He's going to be, got to step up, and he's got to play with all these kids. It's nerve-wracking, isn't it? And I say, yes, it is nerve-wracking, and we'll try and help. But do you think it will be nerve-wracking making your debut, walking out at Old Trafford in front of 75,000 people?
It's part of
It's
what it
what we're
is.
preparing kids for, and it's tough. And I know it's tough, and they are just kids, very young in some cases, but there has to be some stress in it
Yeah, of course.
to
Well, there
come
is
from the
this, or there is
juggling.
other things, isn't there? If you're doing ballet or cricket, it's not just football. This happens. I mean, like you say, if you want to be the best at what you do, it's not going to be easy, right? Otherwise, everyone will be the best. So
Absolutely, it wouldn't be elite, and you're exactly right. My wife was a former national gymnast and a top gymnastics
Oh, that's
coach, and
proper intense.
she talks to tell you the same stories there. That selection, exactly, as you say, takes place there. When I was at Chelsea, we looked at the processes that the Royal Ballet School use in assessing people, because it's really interesting, and that was fierce,
I can imagine.
And so yes, it's any elite level means, as I say, means selection, which means disappointment, and you try and do it as well as you can, but that is part of the game. And if you don't want to pay the price potentially for that, don't walk in the door. That's what you have
Absolutely.
to.
Well, on that one then, Chris, just broadly speaking again, and obviously with your rich experience around this and the work at Southampton now and with the scouting game and everything else, are there things that we could do better? And when I say we, I mean from the clubs, from the coaches, from parents. Could we improve this system? Are there things you think, actually, I wish we just done a bit more of that, or if we change this from your side of things? And I know it'll never be perfect, because that's not the way the world works, but is there things we could do to make it better?
Absolutely, and from taking it personally, from my point of view, in an academy, it's no exaggeration to say every day when I'm at work, I'm talking to my team and everyone at the academy always about, or what about if we tried this? Every day you're trying to improve, because we can never get it 100% right, and we're always looking for ways to improve. I mentioned how we're reviewing the grading system, for example. You're always looking to improve things. And we talk about when players come in on trial, when they're older ones, not putting them straight in on day release because it's a bit physically heavy for them, try and break them in. All these little things we're always trying to improve. So yes, we need to train scouts better. We need to support them better. We need to give them more tools to bring to bear. We need to be more professional as scouts. You know, there's a long way of improvement. I went to a game quite recently at Reading, an under-21 game, because I was looking at a player playing for another side. It's at the stadium at Reading, and there were probably 12 scouts there, and you all put in the same area at Reading, up one of the boxes. It's very nice. There's not many people there watching 21's game, but
Yeah.
you had a great view. Must have been 12 of them there, all white men, I might say.
Yep.
All oldies like me, mostly oldie like me. And so there's a whole other issue there. But gossiping about players for most of the game,
Yep.
we call it, you know, intelligence or information misgossip. And that's fine, that's part of the scout world. I'm focusing on this player because I'm trying to make mind up whether you know, he's good enough for us. So I'm focusing on my report, writing my notes, watching the player. Half time, I'm checking stats from them and so on. And so I'm absolutely focused. 10 minutes from the end of the game, I look up. I'm the only one left in the
They're
box.
gone.
They've all gone early. Now, some grounds that you go to, first team games, you might go early to get away from the traffic. There's hardly anybody there. So what out of traffic? What about if they brought on a 17-year-old in the last 10 minutes?
Yeah.
You missed it. That's generally amateur approach from scouts, I think. And so we have a lot to do to improve our own image as scouts, and there's lots of great scouts out there. I mentioned Ray Ramage at Chelsea, absolutely great example. So
But Chris, is that the worry a little bit then? Because again, you know better than I do, but a million times over, it feels a little bit like that. It isn't as professional as maybe some parts of football is, and that's fine. I'm sure it will get there in the end. Scan it, it's working towards it, and with people like yourself doing what you're doing around it, I think that will help. But have we opened the door up to more scouts that haven't got the same ethos and approach that you've had and experience for over years, and therefore it's almost going the other way first? It's almost becoming less professional and a bit more amateurish before we have to get the right people doing the right things. Because the new generation feels that a little bit more. I'll go and watch 20 minutes of a match, and that's enough for me. Where I'm sure you'll go and watch a whole game. You'll do a proper scouting report. You'll do everything that way it should be, and therefore you and the players infected by your decisions and what you do are getting the best possible outcomes based on what you've seen, rather than someone else that may be cutting a few corners. To say that politely.
I agree. I think scouting is the last part of football to be professionalized, but it is getting there. It
Yep.
is improving, I must say that, with the technology that I mentioned as well, and the best training. There is better training, I think, in many respects now for scouts, and so it is improving. I wouldn't want to give a picture that it wasn't.
Yep.
One of the things you do find at clubs, though, is you have a new generation of young scouts, and they what I call the football manager generation, you know, and they've grown up on the app and the football manager games on video and what have you, and they're great with the data. Many of them will have sports science degrees, and they come out of university at 21, having had years on Football Manager or similar. There are other Football Manager games, I know, and they think they know everything about the game and the players because they know a lot of stats and so on, and they want to go straight into first team scouting at the top level. They don't want to pay their dues, sort of thing. Now, grassroots scouting is not for everyone. It's there are different types of scouting, but I think there is a craft to be learnt, and I think that some of the newer generation of scouts are too impatient to get right to the top quickly, and they underestimate how important it is to learn your craft about learning different sorts of players. No, I don't mean to say they all have to should start in grassroots because it is a different sort of scouting, but there's got to be a process of learning and development, and that is some of them are the newer generation don't have the patience to do that. So that is a bit of a worry, but generally we are getting better as an industry. We are professionalizing. It is improving. But it's slow progress. So progress.
Yeah, fair enough. And how do you see it evolving in the next 5 to 10 years, the world of scouting then? I mean, technology, obviously AI is going to come and play a part. I'm sure the work you're doing with the scouting game. How do you see it evolving over the next 5 years?
Video is the big game changer, Scott, you know, and that was it was happening anyway. The amount of video scouting that any scout does you now compared to 5 years ago, even certainly 10 years ago, obviously, is massive change. COVID really accelerated it because you couldn't get out and watch games, so everyone was doing much more video stuff. So obviously, when you're looking at the first team game, first team level, even in non-league now, video is available much lower down the pyramid than it was before. But in academies, we do more and more video work. We have a team of video scouts, for example, who just do video scouting, and there's more exchange of videos between academies. All that is helping. There are platforms, commercial platforms out there now, where you can gradually access more and more video. It was reaching down more and more into grassroots. You know, our business in the scouting game is based on the fact that lots of games get videoed now. And even parents say to us, well, our club doesn't video a game. Can I record the game on my phone? And we say, yeah, you can.
It's good enough.
We advise them how to do it, where to stand and what to do in the game. And we've done loads of videos based on phone technology. So video is changing scouting, and it's a whole world in itself. It's a whole subject in itself, but that is the big change. And you will see more and more clubs using video for their own purposes, and then there will be more and more platforms at which you can access those, and that opens up scouting. So you imagine 95% of first team scouting at the top level is done by video. You know, so Brighton signed Moises Caicedo from Ecuador entirely on video. You know, so it's happening more and more. It's just so cost effective. You
Course it is.
know, I was saying last night, looking at a player's flagged up to me at another club, and I say to our guys, have we got video on him? Let's get two or three scouts to have a look. And that's done in minutes rather than saying, oh, well, we've got to
Wait
send
for the
them to
next game.
wherever, you know, and go and watch the game, you know, and it's so time saving. And cost saving to use video that the genie is out of the bottle, and that will happen more and more and more. There still is, of course, as scouts, we much prefer to see players live, be it on grassroots or first team, because you can pick up so many more of those little clues that I mentioned before live. If I go to watch a centre back and the ball is down the other end, I'm still watching the centre back.
Course,
The camera is watching the
gone.
ball. So I don't see. Is he talking to the other teammates? Where's his starting position? You know, as it where's so I can get that live, which I can't get on camera, but it will cost my club X amount for me to get there, and I can only watch one game in an afternoon. So I start at home, I can watch two or three on video.
And I
So
guess if you watch the videos first, you could probably rule out a rule in as well a little bit, can't you? Because there's clear
absolutely,
red flags at least before you actually go on the trip then and see them in person.
and exactly that is how we do it, Scott. The scanning of players generally. More and more is done on video, identifying players of interest, and then your live scouts, if you like, can then go and be selective. And that is the general strategy that most clubs are working towards. And you will see it in grassroots, more and more video, more and more of it getting available, more platforms will emerge to share that video. You've got all safeguarding issues to be looked at and you know, dealt with sort of thing. But it's happening. It's happening, and it will continue. That's the big change.
What's your favorite type of scouting out of there's four, isn't there? The grassroots, the first team, 21s.
Well, you say that there's grassroots scouting, there's academy scouting where you're watching players for other academies, first team scouting, and opposition scouting, which is different again. So they're the four, and I've done
What's your
all four.
favorite?
I
You have a favorite?
prefer, I like it all. It all has its joys and downfalls. Grassroots, you have to watch a lot of games. You're out in all weathers. But we all started in grassroots. I've coached in grassroots, and my sons were younger, so obviously we have a great affinity for it. And it's available, and it's local, and you can get out and watch a lot of games in the right places. So there's all that sort of side to it. I love the summer tournaments can be great. You know, done those for years, really. But for me, the particular joy, and it could be academy scouting or first team, is when you're going to watch one particular player, and I'm focused on that player. Now, because of my role as being quite senior, that's quite a lot of the time I'm going to do that. I cover live probably 4 games a week on
Wow.
video. I would add then another 3 or 4. So I'm
Wow.
watching 7 or 8
That's a
games a
lot.
week,
Yep.
and almost invariably I'm focusing on an individual player. And I really enjoy that, trying to, unwrap that player and find all those clues
Yeah, like
and
a
then have
detective.
the judgment. Yeah, it
Yeah,
is. There's a
yeah.
lot of that in it. And we can find out. Julie, my wife, is terrific at this. I remember when I was at Chelsea, we were interested in a player in non-league. And Julie is great on with social media and so on. And
What's his
she
profile like? Yeah.
found everything about him,
Yeah.
his family, where he lived,
Yeah.
what had happened. The family had a divorce, and she knew it all.
It
And
sounds like
so,
my wife. They're quite nosy. She wants to know if there's going on.
Julie
It
is
helps
brilliant
paint a
at it.
picture.
And so you can find all that information out, which is quite frightening in many
Yeah.
ways about people. So you gather all that information together, but it all hinges on going to watch that player. Can you picture them playing up in our first team or in our 21s, whatever it is? And that is so difficult, and it's such a great intellectual challenge to make that
Yeah.
assessment. And
Yeah.
that's the thing I find the most enjoyable, is the detailed assessment of an individual's player's game.
Love it. And just a final couple of questions, if that's okay, Chris. I said an hour and I've already pushed my luck on this one. But the book is going to be out in January, I believe.
Yes,
That sounds
absolutely.
exciting. Do you mind giving us a little bit of brief about what? Because you can't find a
Sure.
scouting book. I've tried. I wanted to learn about scouting a bit more and find out what was going on about just to broaden my own knowledge. And I couldn't find a book. Maybe I wasn't looking at a place, but I couldn't find one.
No,
So,
there are very few.
right.
I've got them all on my bookcase here in this office, and there aren't many of them.
Tell us about your one then.
It's called The Scouting Game, and it's out January the 6th, Pitch Publishing. And so I tried to write it from different perspectives. So it will explain to parents the things that we've been talking about, how the scouts work, what are they looking for. But I also wanted it to be a teaching manual, if you like, for scouts. How to write reports. What do reports look like? What are different sorts of reports you might write? What are the different profiles of players, positional profile? What makes a good left back? What makes a good striker? Everything is in the book.
Fantastic.
Grassroots, academy scouting, when you're going out looking at players for other academy, first team scouting, opposition scouting, the whole discussion about video scouting, but also look at some of the biases that come in to scouting, racism, confirmation bias, lots of other things, to look at what other things are going on in the scout's mind when they're looking at players. So I hope it's the market there is, because it's football, people are just generally interested in football, wanted it to be of interest. So there's stories throughout it, examples of things I've learned and mistakes I've made in the game and players I've seen or passed on or whatever. And so hopefully bring it alive in that way. But I wanted it to be for parents as a guide. There's a whole section on parents, a whole section on agents. How do they work? How do scouts work with agents? All that. So it's exactly what you said at the beginning, Scott, is trying to demystify and
Yeah.
open up the world of scouting to say, this is what we do. This is how we work, what we're looking for, how we work with other people, and these different sorts of scouting. So hopefully it'll be of interest to parents, football fans generally, coaches, but also people who want to get into scouting. So hopefully there's a variety of audiences. We shall see.
I think if you're involved in football, pretty much any level, like, you have to understand that space as well, not just to go and work, but to understand it. So I will be buying the book, Chris. I can't wait for this
Thank
to come
you.
out. Thank you so much. If you're happy to do so, when it is out, just remind me and I'll whack a little message on our podcast near that time so
That's
people
great.
can know about it
Yeah,
because
thank you.
it's the thing that I think we should all broaden our horizon know a bit more about. I think it helps us, our journey. And hopefully what it helps us do is build better relationships with all the scouts out there so we can work collectively together to make sure that we're finding the best process to get these players where they need to be. So no one's missing out and everyone's getting in at the right space at the right time. And I think we can work to make that happen.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That'd be great.
Brilliant, Chris. Final question. We ask all our guests this, so you have to answer, I'm afraid. If there was one thing you could change about the world of football, coaching, scouting, whatever it might be, just one thing, what might you change?
I would slash the cost of coaching courses that the FA run
Love that one already. Just spent
down
£1,000 on
to
the UEFA, so I'm all for that one.
absolutely. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
In Spain, they have five times as many A licensed coaches that they used to be level four coaches working in their game as we do in the UK. And a great majority of those work at grassroots level. The cost of doing that license is a fifth of what it is in the UK, exactly the same proportion. They've got five times as many coaches qualified
Fifth of the
working
price to get in.
grassroots, and it's a fifth of the cost. Well, the two things, it's not coincidental there, is it? So
No.
that will be the biggest improvement we can make to our national game, I believe, is to help grassroots coaches perform at a higher level, have them better trained. In order to do that, you've got to make it more accessible. There needs to be more courses, and they need to be massively cheaper to really change the game. There's millions and millions of pounds, billions, in fact, in the game. And if I could make wave a magic wand and shift, millions into the game, that's where I would aim it at
Do you think,
coaching.
Chris, and not to get too controversial here, but a great point and one I'm sure we'll all support fully. Does that correlate then to the fact that there's not as many English managers at top flight clubs, the national team now? Is that, I know that's going to the top end of this pyramid, but ultimately, is that, if we're not getting the grassroots right and enough people in at that level, then by default, sure, we're not going to get the coaches at the top end either.
Yeah, I think it must play a part in that, Scott. I think the other thing, though, we have to take into account is that because the Premier League grew out of the old Football League Division One, we still in our heads think that it is an English league.
It's not, is it?
It's
It's
not.
an
It's an
international league based
international
in
league
England.
that happens to be based
Yeah,
here. So
absolutely.
we have to think about that in terms of the managers and the players. They're going to be the top players in the world, playing in the top league in the world, and the top managers. And so it will be crazy to think that. Half of them would be English. You'd like to
But
think
there's
there'll be
very few, though, right, isn't there? There's
better.
very
But
few. And
absolutely.
winning tournaments, like you're right, I don't think it should be. I'm okay with it. I think it's great. We benefit from that kind of cross-cultural, multicultural league that we happen to be based in England. But it'd be nice to see a few more, wouldn't it? Like English managers, British managers, just kind of competing at the top levels. It just feels like we every year that goes by, that number's diminishing, not increasing. And I wonder if
Absolutely.
that's a correlation to that.
Well, and so if we said, all right, that the Premier League is different, let's look at the Championship then.
For sure.
Should
Good point.
that be different? Well, no, but you still see that pattern. Very few black managers,
Yeah.
even fewer Asian coaches, managers, or players. Why is that? Why do we still have that where we're not reflecting our communities just
Yeah.
generally? With the people who get to these senior positions in the game, there's got to be something wrong. And also, you look at then the number of British coaches that rise to the top, and I think that that making the game the qualifications more accessible will help. But if you're a professional in the game, the qualifications are accessible to you through the great work that the PFA do. So that shouldn't be a restriction, really, because you don't have that issue for most of the PFA members of worrying about how much it's going to cost because
Sure.
the
Yeah.
union pay it for you. So it's grassroots way of change, but that would be a change that would help develop coaches there who would then go on up the game. It would improve the standard of players, and the
Yeah.
standard of our players has improved. You look at the way that the academy structure was completely transformed by the Triple P, 2010-ish, around that sort of time, 11, when that came out. Our English teams at under 17, 19 doing way better than they used to do. So we are improving,
For sure.
but we need this drive of getting more and more coaches in the game from the bottom up, not
Yeah.
looking at the top
Bottom
down, but
down.
bottom
Yeah.
up, and help improve those standards of coaching, and make that accessible and affordable to more people.
Perfect, Chris. Thank you so much. I've really pushed my luck on this one with you, but I'm so grateful for your time. If people want to find out more about you, the work you're doing, the scouting game, whether it's the video analysis or the book, what's the best way of reaching out to you?
Our website, thescoutinggame.co.uk, has everything on it.
Perfect. We will put that in the show notes links. We can click it nice, easy, and find you. Chris, thank you so much for helping me out personally demystify this whole world of scouting that I, you know, it's been behind that curtain. I had a little peep through today, so I'm really grateful. Best luck with the book and the
Thank
scouting
you.
game analysis. I'm sure it'll be great. And if you're up for coming back on at some point, maybe 6 months or so, and get updates how things are, that'd be brilliant. Would you be up for that?
Sure, of course I would. Yeah,
Top
definitely.
man. All right. Thanks, Chris. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Take care.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.